All righty, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a beautiful Monday afternoon. It's beautiful because the sun is out, the temperatures are mild, not a lot of snow on the ground, and Will and Jim, the Inno boys.
Oh, Steve.
Just like Peaches and Herb have reunited. Will's been on the road for the past couple weeks. Good to have you back.
Good to be back.
You want to tell people what you're doing now? Do you run Inno? Is that exactly what
you're doing? No, I'm working with our parent company, which is based in Charlotte, to bring Inno into as many markets as possible. Chicago's been such a great market for us. There's so much excitement and activity and buzz around the local innovation economy and ecosystem. And though, you know, the three of us are very bullish on Chicago, there's cool stuff happening in the Twin Cities and Cincinnati and Indianapolis. So we're looking to serve as that voice and advocate and authority and markets kind of around the country.
Does your hip for a model that work or your sort of model, are you in search of like a hip radio guy who you can partner with and have a show on a...
That's how we measure our markets is we show up with pictures of Steve, of you, and we say, do you have a guy like this? And if they say yes, we're in.
That was another stroke moment. I was just telling you guys off the air, but I've been having stroke moments lately. Okay, but talk about other markets. There was a study out by a group. I don't remember the name of the group, but they looked at what software engineers are made or paid in different parts of the country. And if you look at just the salary, Chicago doesn't do very well.
Right. The study was by Hired. They're kind of like a platform for recruiting, and they sort of go walk you all the way through the initial job offer through the salary compensation at the end. So they have all this data on how much software engineers are being paid kind of across the country. And they did a study across the U.S. and in several international countries and found, at least in the U.S., that Chicago ranked 10th out of 10. So the last $108,000 a year, nothing to sort of sneeze at. It's a pretty good salary for a lot of people, but you know, versus San Francisco, Seattle, Austin, New York.
So Boston. San Francisco was listed at 134, Austin 110, Boston 116, New York 120. Toronto is on the list at 74. Which is pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, Chicago did outpace every international market. I mean, I think that's just sort of a testament to the maturity of the tech ecosystem in the United States, that even the lower paying markets still sort of outpace what's happening across the world.
But then if you put in cost of living, Illinois does, Chicago does much better.
Much
and
better.
So does Toronto.
It's a totally different story when you put in cost of living. I mean, what's happening out in the Valley is just sort of insane. And then with the cost of living in San Francisco, New York, even Boston, D.C.
Totally. But when it comes to the kind of adjusted cost of living, I don't want Chicago to kind of pat itself on the back because, we're middle of the pack when you factor this number in. Because, again, we've been looking at other markets around the country. Any city that's not Boston or San Francisco or New York has a better cost of living. That's pitch number one that they're bringing. So if we really want to be a dominant tech ecosystem and we really want to compete against the Seattles and the coasts, we're going to have to pay our developers more. That's just, we can't kind of think that, we got a great restaurant scene. Everybody loves Chicago.
People want to live
here.
Everybody counts, is pitching cost of living. There's something to that.
I think so, and especially it counts for the people who just are totally invested in Chicago, too.
Yeah.
Like the people who want to be here realize that, like, hey, I'm going to make a great salary here. I'm going to not spend nearly as much money on my rent. And that's totally a net positive for folks
Okay, so take all of that and put into it the story you guys had this week. It was Karis who wrote the story about how Facebook is going to increase its presence here. They're going to hire more people. And when I read that, it seemed like Karis was kind of making the point that a lot of it was about the vibe of the whole thing.
Yeah, basically Facebook is going to add 30 more jobs at least here in this year and sort of expecting to add a few more. They employ about 70 here in Chicago, so a modest-sized office, I think on North Wacker is their space right now. And basically what they said, they've been here for a couple of years and found that there's really a lot of talent here in Chicago. They have offices kind of around the country, and then they're really sort of investing some more resources and kind of growing out what they're doing here in Chicago.
Yeah, and that's something Jim and I have talked a lot about is that when we cover Chicago tech, people tend to assume that just means Chicago companies headquartered
right,
here.
Right, right, right.
But it's amazing when you think about, like, a big piece of our, again, tech ecosystem is Google's presence, Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook. every major tech company has an office here, and that's totally reflective
Snapchat
of...
Snapchat even has a small sales office here.
And that's
Chicago.
Reflective of the talent, and it's reflective of the fact that the initial pitch when you're launching a business is you go to build on the coast and you sell here. You can build anywhere, so of course these companies want to be here where you can sell.
You mentioned a few company names. Some of them are unicorns, and there's another story about how you look at the Chicago-based companies that reached quote-unquote unicorn status, did it pretty quickly when you compare to others.
Yeah, and not just
and that's
not
what,
just
a billion? Unicorn, that's $1 billion?
Yeah, unicorn is a private company valued over $1 billion. This is double unicorn, Steve. We're
okay.
Talking...
Two horns.
We're talking, when you look at the startups that have reached a $2 billion valuation, the fastest company to have ever done that is Uptake, the data analytics firm based here in Chicago. And in that list of 11 of the fastest the companies to get to a $2 billion valuation fastest, three of them are Chicago. Avant was five at 2 years, 9 months, and Groupon was seven at 3 years.
Okay.
So it's really cool that, yeah, we don't have the unicorns at the coast too, but when we do, we get them pretty quick.
I got to fly. I want to check traffic real quick, but two of those three, the other two, have had issues. Right? Is there a danger of growing a little too quickly?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a story for those previous two companies. Uptake will have to kind of make sure it sort of reverses that course.
It's 12:22. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in on a Monday afternoon. And if it's Monday, that usually means the Inno boys are in as well. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. We talk about the things that they're covering in Chicago's tech world and innovation world. And, you know, and guys, we have talked a lot in the past couple of weeks about the tech industry and immigration and all of that, you know, and how intricately or intertwined, I guess, they are. But I want to talk about this Chicago startup, Luminade. Now, we've heard of them before, right? They came up with the floatable lanterns or things like that, but now they're focusing in kind of on Syrian refugees.
Yeah, exactly. They had a device, actually, that garnered them a little bit of fame. They were on Shark Tank, got an investment from Mark Cuban a couple years ago, and yeah, they basically came out with a device that is sort of this waterproof inflatable lantern that was used very much in disaster zones, so in earthquake situations and other sort of emergency situations, and they found that refugees were using a lot of them, and Syrian refugees in particular, so they're now back with a new device that's basically the lantern, but it's also a phone charger. They found that people sort of fleeing disaster areas really needed to have their phone charged to call their family and to sort of check in with the folks and make sure people are okay. So basically their new device, which is on Kickstarter, which has raised over $60,000 in just a few days over their goal, basically is that lantern plus the ability to charge your phone.
And so, you know, and I've read a lot of stories. We tend to think of, I think, maybe the older people do more, of cell phones as a luxury, you know, expensive. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who was coming down yesterday to feed the homeless at Fourth Prez right up the street. He said, you know, and he talked about the community of them and all of that. And he said, and they all have cell phones. And they kind of surprised me at first, but I just think that they've become this ubiquitous sort of apparatus that we all have. And when you're on the run or in desperate situations, keeping that charged can be very important.
Ubiquitous is the word for it. Everybody has a cell phone. It's actually the amount of devices in the world. The math would suggest that people actually have 1.5.
Is that right? Really?
So
yeah.
It is ubiquitous. And what's really cool about this, it's not just one of those, okay, we need to find a battery to recharge it. The device has a built-in high-efficiency solar panel to make sure that it can recharge in the sun as well.
So the idea is you can be in a camp, you can be on a boat, you can be wherever, and this will keep your phone charged.
Totally. It can be for the adventurous backpacker as well, but... You know, the beauty of it is that because it's inflatable, it can completely fold flat, so you can send a lot of them quickly. And that's where, yes, if you're an outdoorsy person, 100%, you should and can get one. But they've really kind of leaned into the disaster relief element of what they're good for.
And there's a movement, right, to get people to help and to share these.
Exactly, yeah. So basically that's a part of it. They're trying to send 500 lights to Syrian refugees through the Kickstarter campaign. So really connecting with some of their charity partners to get those lights out to people who really need it the most.
All right, so we'll follow that. Maybe we can give some to Justin Trudeau while he's in town and or in the country anyway and bring them up to the refugees there. All right. So there's that. And then the other thing, you know, that we've talked a lot about when it comes to the immigration issue and tech have been sort of these lawyers trying to go out to airports and to help people. And there's a Chicago startup that has jumped right into the middle of that as well.
Yeah, you're really seeing the legal tech community really see an influx of interest and need of their services with the immigration issues that are going on right now. One startup, Paladin, a female-run startup in the in 1871 right now, they are a startup that connects lawyers to pro bono opportunities, and they are sort of seeing their demand go through the roof.
And so they were out at the O'Hare, right? And they went out to different places.
Yeah, so basically the lawyers that they connect with are out there. There are several other legal startups that kind of connect folks with lawyers sort of using a tech-enabled platform, and they're seeing just sort of use skyrocket.
Now, bigger picture, though, aside from this particular issue, what Paladin wants to do is create accounting isn't the right word, right? But just sort of a database or a way to follow these pro bono cases and to see how they succeed over time.
Totally. It's not just a marketplace for here's a list of opportunities, here's a list of lawyers, you know, connect yourself. They've built really cool technology that the lawyers and law students will take a survey to assess their backgrounds, and a proprietary algorithm will match them with pro bono opportunities that best suits their interests. So they're kind of taking an extra step to make sure that, you know, it's not just here they are, here you are, go get them.
Well, I would imagine a lot of times they're saying, okay, we placed a case with a lawyer, done deal. And that's not it anymore. Now they're going to see how that worked. And depending on how that worked, it will help them place other cases more effectively in the future.
Yeah, they offer a paid subscription data analytics dashboard that will allow these law firms to see case updates and outcome reports. So again, they're really kind of serving as this platform to make sure that you're not just checking a box, but you're following through and really doing good.
Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno, where do people find out more?
ChicagoInno.com and subscribe to The Beat, which is our daily newsletter.
Great to see you guys. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune and comes by from time to time. Randy, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we were talking, I don't know, maybe it was a couple visits ago, about Twitter accounts where they have a little bit of an edge, right? Have a little fun. It was Wendy's.
Merriam-Webster's another
Merriam-Webster, that was the other one, where there's a little sass involved, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of is, I mean, there's a line, but it seems like you should push it a little bit when you're on Twitter.
You should respect it, but you should also push it. It makes for good community engagement.
All right, so we got all that, and then this ruling that I didn't realize in the NBA where there's this new policy that the teams have to be nice to each other.
They have to be nice.
Twitter. Explain that to me.
For more or less, you nailed it. Yeah, it's a little more complicated when it's written out, but teams are supposed to be nice and respectful to each other on Twitter, and just the NBA and not any other teams or franchises.
And so a couple of other teams or franchises are sort of playing with that.
Oh, yeah. The NHL has had a lot of fun with this NBA policy already.
Well, explain that for me. What did they do?
So after the policy was released, the Dallas Stars kind of poked fun at the policy by tweeting at the Predators, and I quote, "Let's all have fun and have a good game today. Wait, wrong league. We hope we win and you lose because this is sports."
and so you were saying as well, so we're kind of kicking that around, the idea that the NHL is maybe the least uptight of the professional leagues.
I think so. I know especially the Cubs like to have a lot of fun, but
right.
The NHL is a little more edgy, like you said. And I don't know if I've noticed this because I'm a huge hockey fan, but one of my favorite accounts to follow is the LA Kings. After they won the Stanley Cup a few years ago, they kind of came out full force and were straight up ripping on fans of other teams and other
right,
teams.
Really?
And yeah, it was a lot of fun from a fan perspective. It was a lot of fun to see.
Well, it will not fly in the NBA.
No, it won't.
Or the No Fun League. But you're right. The Cubs are pretty lighthearted anyway,
yeah.
But I don't know if they're ripping on other teams.
Yeah, they're very lighthearted and fun, but they're not kind of like that dark humor, more edgy.
The dark humor, edgy. That's the sort of person you'd find in Buckingham Palace, right?
Right. Absolutely.
I was telling Bill and Andre earlier that one of the things we're going to talk about is the fact that the Queen is looking for someone to type her tweets.
The Queen is.
What does that mean?
Well, the Queen is hiring a social media manager. A lot of businesses have social media community managers, and it looks like the royal family is not an exception. So it starts at £30,000, which we actually converted this yesterday. Some of us were a little interested in the position. it averages out to about $37,000 in American dollars.
That's not too much to live at.
to live in London. No. it's really not. But
maybe there's a room in the palace for them.
Maybe you might have access to the Queen's corgis. That's something that I'd be interested in.
Is that a plus for you?
Borrow Princess Kate's wardrobe. Duchess Kate, sorry.
for $37,000. And I love this, the way they talk about, though. It's like your work will be seen around the world. That's always what they tell someone who they don't want to pay.
Right. You can manage Her Majesty's 2.77 million followers, but...
But you have to write as if you're the queen.
You do, yes.
And it seems to me like that would be a perilous position, too.
Yeah, I know the queen has tweeted as herself on a few occasions. I believe she thanked everybody after celebrating one of her recent birthdays. But for the most part, yeah, it's run in a pretty straightforward voice. You can't really act like you're an NHL player on it.
Okay, but so, I mean, you follow this for a living, and if you are handling an account as important as the Queen's would be, I mean, look, this is all about image. The Queen is all about image. It seems as if, I mean, there must be some infrastructure above this $37,000 a year player, because that's a lot of risk to give someone that you're paying that much. You know what I mean? I mean, it's the sort of thing where if this person doesn't do it correctly, there could be big trouble in the palace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the position is completely monitored. And, you know, I have an understanding of how the Tribune's hierarchy works, where, you know, I report to someone who reports to someone who reports to someone. And I imagine this is the same. The posting did say to manage the Queen's Twitter. So maybe they have someone managing the Twitter, someone managing the Snapchat, someone managing something else.
Right.
Not entirely sure.
Which would
you
choose? Would you prefer managing her Snapchat or her Twitter?
Ooh, that's a pretty tough question. I think
maybe
Snapchat.
Her Instagram. Is she big on Instagram?
To be honest, I haven't really checked out the Queen's Instagram, but I think that any of the photo-heavy ones would be really fun. You'd get to kind of get up close and personal, especially a Snapchat, you know, on real time.
All right. Well, let me know how the application goes, because it sounds like you're interested in that.
Not quite so much, but it's intriguing. But
talk about the perils, though, because if you make a mistake or you do something incorrectly, the whole world is standing by to make fun. Actually, that just happened.
You end up like the education department.
At the Department of Education. What happened there?
Well, as it turns out, spelling, when you're running the education department's tweet, it's a pretty important thing. Over the weekend, the U.S. Department, which recently put Betsy DeVos in charge, a little bit of a controversial decision there. But the department tweeted a quotation and attributed it to a famed African-American sociologist, W.E.B., Du Bois, and
go ahead.
They spelled it D Bois.
They spelled it D-E instead of D-U,
right? D-U, yes.
Okay, so let's go completely off terrain here. The AP did the story, and they gave the pronouncer, like you just said, Du Bois. I always thought it was Dubois.
That's what I thought was like the French, like Dubois, but
right.
It said the Washington Post ran the story, and it had a parentheses Du Bois, B-O-Y-Z.
Interesting.
Du Bois.
I've always said Dubois, and but I grew up in Mantino, where the Du Bois family is very prevalent. They call them the Du Boises down there.
Yeah, yeah.
I always said W E Dubois though, so we'll see. W E B Dubois.
Well,
they made a mistake, and then they fixed it.
And then they fixed it, and when they tried to fix it, they made another misspelling.
Right.
So.
And which is just a great example of, I mean, everyone's looking at that because of Betsy DeVos, and I'm sure this had absolutely nothing to do with Betsy DeVos whatsoever. But it's this gotcha sort of world, and that's why the Queen needs to be very careful when she hands out.
Everyone should be very careful,
her
really.
£30,000. Okay, so while we're talking about controversy and the administration and all of that, I was talking to one of the protesters today, a woman who has tried to protest Congressman Peter Roscombe, and Congressman Roscombe doesn't actually go to a lot of places. He was on yesterday the Sunday Papers with Rick Pearson here by phone. He's got a telephone town hall tonight, but he's not physically in the place of people, and they want to protest. Anyway, more and more protests are coming up for different congressmen around the country, and now there's this bot that's available, right, that can help you. WeBot, find a protest near you, or what's that about?
Yeah, WeBot. It's pretty easy. There's a lot of protests. It's hard to keep them straight, and so
if you just wake up in the morning, you got your cornflakes, you're like, I'm looking for a protest.
Where can I start? You can go to facebook.com/WeBot, and all you have to do is tap send message, follow the prompts, and this little Facebook chat bot will pull up your location and let you know everything that's going on around you.
So as a journalist, do you think that diminishes the impact of the protests?
I don't necessarily think so, because one of the things I do is I look online and I look for social media crowdsourcing to see what's going on out there and stuff that we can overlook if we're not out in the streets. So I think it's kind of personally helpful to what I do, at
least. Well, you know, they talk about organized protests or people being bussed here or bussed there. And I just wonder if this bot falls into that. I mean, I would argue it doesn't. I would argue that this is just social media, a way to use social media to get your voice out in the way that you want it out.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a way to find that information that's already out there and maybe find it a little easier.
Tell me again the name of the site, because
it's facebook.com/WeBot, WeBOT.
That might be my new weekend activity. I'll just
check sign out
up,
WeBot.
Find a protest. Randy Schaefer writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720. Tim Smith is in the studio. He is the founder and CEO of Wiglaf Pricing and comes by from time to time just to talk about the whole, I don't know, is it a science? Is it a craft? What would you call it? Bring that mic a little close to you, maybe.
Pricing is both a science and a craft. I think of it as a management decision that too often management doesn't really treat reasonably.
Okay, so there's that, but what I want to talk to you about is the fact that you are an adjunct professor at DePaul.
Yep.
And your students are 30 minutes away from their midterm.
Yep.
And you're going to finish this interview and then bolt down there on your bike, which you ride all over the place, and give them their midterm.
Yeah, that's exactly the plan.
Do teachers get, you seemed a little apprehensive or anxious about it.
Will they actually be prepared? How many complaints will I get before the midterm? And then when it's over, they all get that sigh of relief.
So. Who knew? So we should maybe send care packages to professors, just like we do to our kids at finals time. I learned that today. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're totally tensed out, and I have to try to calm them down so they can concentrate
to
and
get
do their
best. To get the best out of them, yeah.
Right.
Okay, so let's do this. You know, we're going around Christmas shopping and everything, and I'm a little bit more of an online shopper than my wife is, although she's coming around, and really I'm far behind. But just about every time we have this conversation, well, this store is going to be gone. That store is going to be gone. Are those stores that we shop at Christmas time or drive by on the weekends, are they doomed?
Doomed is a pretty harsh word. And the other question is timing. In a long-term trend, we're definitely seeing the movement of all purchases from physical bricks and mortar stores into online across many different product categories,
right.
Even consumables.
I would imagine it varies by age.
It does vary by age, but even that looks at the long-term trend. We all get older and pass away. So the long-term trend says, if I want to manage a company for today, I'm trying to manage where they shop today.
Right, right.
Where am I building the company for tomorrow so I can keep surviving and moving forward?
And so let's talk about two things and then we'll move on. You know, the big malls seem to be breathing their last, maybe, or they're trying to bring in other sorts of tenants. Experiential, I know, is something we talk about. But the very stores that would have been in that mall are now building a brand new building just outside that mall. Why is that more beneficial than being enclosed?
That to me is just an odd behavior, and I have no answer.
Odd that they'd be building anywhere.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't see why they're building in bricks and mortars. I get the idea of, well, let's separate out flagship stores versus your standard department stores. A flagship store like for Bonobos or the eyeglass company, they would have a physical presence to enable their star customers, the customers who really love them, to touch and feel the product.
Like Warby Parker, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, Warby Parker. And then they can go and blog about it and help drive the online stores. But if you're looking at a standard department store like Sears or Macy's or even Nordstrom's, they're having a basic problem. What's their purpose anymore?
Right. Well, it's so funny you bring up Warby Parker, because I'm in the middle of that right now. I have reading glasses, and I'm tired of taking them on and off, so I think I'm getting, you know, clear glasses on top and the gredge. And I'm looking at Warby Parker online, and I can't quite – I know they have a store in Oak Brook that I happened upon. I kind of want to go back to the store and hold these things before I order them online. I'm the sort of guy they got to convince just to make the leap.
And that's not unusual. Another trend that I'm noticing in stores is people have certain items that they really value a lot. They purchase a lot. They care about them. And for those items, those those categories, they need to have that physical interaction.
What kind of clothing or varies by person maybe?
Yeah, it varies definitely by person. I myself care about the boots I wear.
Uh-huh.
I like to shop and buy my boots in person. Now that's me, that's not you.
Right,
you
right.
mentioned glasses. So we have these specialty items that we really care deeply about. And then we have the common things that we really just don't care where it comes from. I'll take a trash can for my kitchen garbage wherever I buy it, and online is just as easy or easier than off.
I bought a shower gel that I liked once. I'll never have to try another one. Just every time it's out, order two or three more.
Yeah.
All right. So there's that then. So if you are a store and you've got to get people in to experience you first before they go online, what do you do? I mean, who does that well? I think you've made reference to Lego and Sur La Table as well does that, right? They have cooking schools and things.
Right. You got Sur La Table pulling off cooking schools, which helps people to interact with the products, see what a cutting board feels like, what a knife feels like, and actually how to chop an onion, which oddly many people don't know how to do.
Right.
Or Lego, they have these big experience places, which of course encourages people to buy Lego sets, but enables them to play it. Home Depot has played with that. Lowe's has played with that.
By having like little seminars?
Yeah, little seminars. But they haven't really pulled it off for the home DIY.
Right.
So I think they have a lot of work to do there.
Tim Smith is the creator, founder of Wigliff Pricing. Sorry, lost that. And the adjunct professor at DePaul. And we're going to cut him loose so that his students can go be tortured by him. Good luck to all involved.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.